You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends, the number one source for travel news, reviews, and in-depth travel journalism. Broadcasting live from Florida's Suncoast on WTMY Sunday Travel Radio. Don't forget, you can listen to us online 24/7 at ttrn.com. And now, here's our host, the travel guy, Roy Lowy.
Thank you, Greg. Today we're at Dakin Dairy in Myakka City, Florida, speaking with Karen Dakin, who's about to take us on a walking tour of the farm. Come on along.
We've always toured people through the farm. People just have a natural curiosity. People show up here all the time wanting to see the farm, especially the snowbirds. They come down, and, you know, everybody seems to have had some attachment one way or another to dairy farming or agriculture in their younger life. So they're always stopping by the dairy to see what's going on here. So what we've really done is we've just made some changes here to accommodate larger groups coming through at one time. We've set up actual stations with tents to provide shade and the comfort as they, and some landscaping and fencing to keep people guided in the areas that we want to keep them.
Now we're looking down on a number of cows in this facility. What is this called?
This is the actual milking parlor. This is what we live for these cows to come in here and give their milk up.
Right.
Yep.
And it looks like some of them are just waiting their turn maybe to get in there.
Some are waiting their turn to come in, and some have just been milked, and they're coming out to drink that lovely fresh water.
As I noticed, it's all open, and you have these large fans up there.
Yes.
I mean, today happens to be a really cool day, but you have these large fans up there to keep the area cool.
Well, one of the reasons you don't see a whole bunch of dairy farms in Florida is what? Florida's hot. It's really not a dairy state, per se. We are a milk deficit state. We ship in semi-loads of milk to supplement the milk demand in the state. Maintaining the dairy farms that we do have is pretty important to keeping our costs in line here in Florida.
All right, well, let's wander on if we may.
Okay. So typically what we do is we will take people from the beginning point through to this point. We're kind of coming to here at the end, but we start people over where we have our composter. And we can just walk down here and I'll show you where that is. And it's kind of neat from the going green standpoint. The landscapers will bring, you know, they have tons of debris that when they clean up people's property, sticks and limbs and things like that, and they bring it to facilities that will shred it into pretty large pieces, and then they're looking for a place to put this stuff. So we receive yard clippings by the semi-load, and we put that around our barns to help us combat with water and mud issues. But in turn, by our cows giving their contribution to it via the manure, it turns into an awesome compost. So we let, and that takes about a year for us to do it that in that fashion. But we let it just kind of layer up, and then we'll harvest it in about a year and put it in these large windrows. And then we have this very big screen over there that will separate out the larger from the smaller pieces. And then we'll ship off this composted material by the semi-loads to wholesale landscaping companies.
So it's all recycled?
It's all recycled, and it's an awesome material. We have a lot of people wanting us to actually bag it. And like I said, that is a whole new industry in itself. That would be another business. So we will eventually climb into that side of things.
Now, did this happen quite by accident, or was it
no, very intentional.
In your plant? Right.
Very intentional, because as you well know, cows are big, and
right.
Their waste stream can cause a problem.
Exactly.
And that's one of the environmental issues that hit our farmers in Florida, was how do we deal with all these nutrient balancing that the Department of Environmental Agency is requiring us to do. So when we designed this facility 6 years ago, we had all these things in mind. We were one step ahead of existing farms because we didn't have to retrofit our farm.
And so I guess they're worried about all of this even affecting the well water, because most of these places out here especially have wells, and of course our underground water system can certainly be affected by all of this.
It can, and you know, if you're not, if you have anything in a concentrated form, be it whether it's synthetic fertilizer from a homeowner,
right,
or you know, manure in a concentrated form, it can present anything in abundance that's going to cause a problem to the environment.
Absolutely.
So when we design this, we capture all of our nutrients in a particular area, and we recycle via the composting. Cows drink a lot of water. They use a lot of water. We recycle the water. It comes back up from our ponds, and it'll flush our floors, and it will also irrigate 250 acres of beautiful high-protein grasses that we have. So it contributes to our fertilization costs. It reduces it between the nutrient-rich water and the composting. We've actually really reduced the synthetic fertilization that we need on this property.
Now, where are you getting your water from?
Our water comes from wells.
Yep,
and it's tested regularly. So it's you know, it's one of the requirements for being a dairy is you have to have your water tested. So it's you know, to manage those nutrients, they want to see how we're doing with it and make sure it is potable water. So at any rate, what you're looking at here is the housing for the barn, for the cows.
Now, as we're standing here, I'm looking out over these cows. I see different colors. I see the black and white. I'm looking at a tan-colored or beige-colored cow. It almost looks like a, without the hump, almost looks drummerish in
yeah.
a sense. What type of cows you know, are there? Are they all basically the same?
Good question. Holstein cows are what you primarily see here. They're the black and whites that everybody's very familiar with, and they are high-producing milk cows. The brown cows that you see and the other ones that are slightly different color are Jerseys or a Jersey-Holstein mix. Jerseys are a smaller breed. They produce less milk but higher butter fat, and being that we are going to be making cheese and bottling our own milk, we wanted to introduce these animals into our herd for the higher butter fat content, as well as they help our first-time calving cows, heifers, to have a smaller calf, so it helps with that first delivery of a calf. So there's a couple reasons we've incorporated them in. They look like deer. They kind of that little cute deer look face.
Should we wonder?
Their primary or bulk of their feed is the grasses we grow.
Right.
So, and you know, we really teetered between grazing and versus having them in these barns that you see. And Florida, because it is so hot, so we did opt for using what we call these freestall barns. These barns reach 74 degrees. The sprinklers and the fans will turn on, and so they get a good soaking, and then they get that cool breeze from the fan, just like when you're at the beach and you get out of the water and it cools you down. So that helps with their own little air conditioning system in there. It helps keep them cool.
Now, in the breeding area, is that a separate area?
Yes. Then once they're milked, we actually, when we built this facility, we went as high-tech as we could, and our cows all have this little necklace on them. There's a computer chip. And when they come into the barn, that helps us to identify which cow is being milked and how much milk she's giving. But it also allows us to enter into the computer cows that our breeder will do that. And then after they're milked, they'll automatically go through the sort gate and they'll automatically get cut out into our treatment area where they'll be artificially inseminated. And we try and time that. We also bull breed, but we try and time that breeding so that they're calving in the cooler months, so it's less stress on the cow and the calf to do that. So we do have calves all year round, but we have a higher concentration coming up right now, actually. Our big objective is to keep our cows cool, comfortable, clean, well-fed, and when they come into the milking parlor, we want them clean and dry. So right now they're being prepped for having the equipment hung on them. So that part is manual. And these cows you see right now have just finished being milked. So they're all coming out.
They're all heading our way here.
They're heading our way straight for that water trough.
So it's the water they go for, not some kind of a tree or something
yeah.
that they go for?
No, interestingly, 92% of the milk you drink is water. So they drink lots and lots and lots of water. They're all chewing their cud, which shows that they're very happy. Again, you see all these fans in here so we can keep them cool while they're milking. Hello, happy cows. Yeah, see, California isn't the only place that has happy cows.
The only place.
No, it's not the only place that has happy cows. Now now you come out and you see these guys are prepping them to be milked.
Right.
And they're hanging that equipment. Now, once they hang it, the computer will kick in. And it's pulsating, just like it feels just like a calf on their nipples. And when the computer senses that there's a reduction in the milk coming, because it's actually weighing that milk that comes out of the cow, so when it senses the reduction in the milk coming out, it will detach that equipment. And then our milkers will come back and just double check and make sure they're fully milked out, which is really important as part of keeping them very healthy, is to not have any milk remaining in their udders.
I don't know where, excuse me, I heard this, but it seems to me that somewhere along the line I heard that if a cow doesn't get rid of its milk, then it becomes painful.
It's painful, and they can get sick from having their milk, and can cause them to get sick. So it's real important to get all that milk out.
I often wonder what happened in the wild if they didn't have a calf. I mean, how did they get rid of the milk?
Well, in the wild, you got to think way back when. You know, there's a lot of genetics that go into breeding animals, and so you're always breeding them for certain qualities. So way back then, they probably didn't produce as much milk as they do now. And just like a woman, after she has her baby, when she's done milking, it'll just dry up and go away, which is what will happen to them. If I did not milk her, she would dry up and it would just go away.
They'd stop giving milk.
Exactly.
Interesting. What's also interesting is that with all this automation, it doesn't take a lot of people to make this all happen.
That's right. And the university studies have shown that, with our size parlor and what we're permitted to have here, our most economical and efficient way to stay profitable is to keep our herds full like they are. We have 1,400 milking cows here, and two people can handle it in the same time frame as if they were milking 900 cows, because it's a matter of there's a whole pattern that they do when they're milking, and they're just very efficient the way they do it.
I just watched something interesting. These cows are coming down this parlor, and they automatically go to that,
the stall,
Is there any sort of pecking order, or are they just, one just walked up, stuck his head in
That's
there?
Right. They just come
just
on
so
in.
They're used to it.
They're used to it, and they want to be milked. they just line right up. Now, it does take a bit of training, and when we have a new heifer that has just had a calf and she's ready to be milked, we'll incorporate her into a herd like this. And sometimes she'll be a little obstinate and need a little bit of coaching and how to turn and make that 90-degree turn to fit into that stall. But
these are more even milked. They're just finished with what they were doing, whether it's water or just looking at it. They're just wandering out on their own, and I guess what, they go back into the field?
They'll go back into their, right, into their barn.
Into their barn.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
This is where we wrap up where your milk comes from.
Right.
And then we'll walk across this bridge that connects the dairy farm to the milk plant. And that bridge is twofold. When we did that bridge, it was really quite by accident how this all came about, because we had to get our milk from this building to the next building.
Right.
So as one thing led to another, we're like, well, we need to put a bridge, and we could actually walk across it. So then when we were designing the building over there and the bridge comes over, we're like, wow, these rooms in here have to be 20 feet tall. Dear me, I think we can put windows in and we can have a viewing area down into the milk bottling area and the milk processing area where we pasteurize it. And then across the hall from it is our cheese room.
So, there you go. And it's amazing that all the planning and all of the research that one does, all of a sudden you find out something as simple as a bridge and being able to put windows in really works.
It works, and it really opened up this agritourism. And then we met Scott, who you talked to. We had already gotten this far, and my husband meets Scott up in Georgia at a farm expo, and he's a consultant for agritourism, so he kind of helped us polish the whole concept up.
In an interview we did with Scott, he has quite a background in Croatia, and as you say, in Georgia. So it's interesting. In fact, I put out an article I'll show you from the New York Times that was in yesterday about agritourism in Germany. So obviously, yeah. Agritourism is becoming a big issue and a big part of tourism in general. What kind of gets lost in ecotourism, but when in fact it's really tourism in itself.
Right, agritourism versus ecotourism. And why not? People really love coming to the farm, so you might as well make it so it's people-friendly, so people can come. I mean, typically speaking, in a working farm, it's not public friendly. You have tractors and, you know, just big equipment moving all over the place and whatnot. But if you set it up right and you have your areas where you can contain your public and whatnot, then you can keep them in certain areas and keep your tractors in other areas, and it works well.
Now, these things we're looking at here, is that where the milk is going?
Yeah, that's where our raw milk will come over, and you're looking at 3 12,000-gallon silos. And the first tank will hold raw milk, and then that raw milk will go through its pasteurization process, and the next two milks will hold pasteurized milk. Skim and, I believe, whole will go. And then what happens is we separate out all the cream, and then we'll reintroduce the cream to get your 1% and 2%, and of course you have your fat-free.
Unfortunately, in Florida, you can't sell raw milk, as where they can in the Carolinas.
Right.
Because I've had some family members that have just come back, and my sister, for example, was allergic to certain dairy products, but she didn't have one problem with the raw milk.
Yeah, and that's something.
I find that interesting, because why would the pasteurization process change that? You think that
you still get the nutrients, even if it's pasteurized. What you lose is the enzymes, and you lose that in all of your foods. Once you heat it past a certain temperature, you've killed those enzymes.
Just like boiling vegetables.
Exactly. So raw milk would be better. Anything in its original, natural, created package is going to be better for you than having it heated up. Unfortunately,
That gentleman down there, he's controlling the flow. Which goes to what tank, or what's it?
Actually, he's working on helping us get started up, because we haven't even started milking.
Oh, okay.
So he's looking, that is a boiler that you're looking at that produces a great deal of steam that we'll use for the pasteurization process, and we'll also use it for our cleaning the system when we're done milking. So he's working on that piece of equipment right now. We're getting very, very close to being able to bottle right now.
Now, the thing is that I imagine once this is all up and running, that there's oversight by the Food and Drug Administration, whoever it is. So it's very, I guess, very controlled.
All of our food in the United States is very, not so much controlled, but managed, watched. There's all checks and balances, which, you know, God bless America for that. Our food in America is very safe to eat. You know, I know there's been a few instances, but, you know, for the most part, you know, the United States has just got very safe, excellent food with good practices to keep things safe for the public.
Well,
so
that's a good thing.
Yeah, that is. Very good. So the near conclusion of our public tour, we take them through here, where you can see where our bridge leads us with the viewing windows. And what this room you're looking at with all this stainless steel is where this is the main brains of everything. It's got to come in here and get pasteurized. This is where we can also mix chocolate for chocolate milk. We can introduce cultures for yogurt shakes that we're going to be making. So that's where all this takes place for the fluid milk products. That we'll start here. And then the next room over is where we'll bottle it. And then shortly behind that, right across the hall here, you'll be able to look down and watch the cheese maker actually making the cheese, stirring it in the vat and putting
now,
it in the mold.
Have you actually started this process? I mean, when you were saying bottling the milk, you are actually bottling and selling at this point?
No, that's what I said. We're at the final stages. We're just weeks away.
Right.
We're weeks away from all this taking place, so
and
we're real excited.
Guess that's when you start doing your testing and making sure that everything.
Absolutely.
Everything is right.
Well, we'll do a lot of testing right now, just using water through the system, and then we'll do many, many, many runs with small quantities of milk to make sure everything's running properly, that it's pasteurizing properly, separating, homogenizing, and that our system is cleaning properly. All those things have to take place. And then the inspector will come in and give its final blessing, but we'll have to make sure all that's
Now, you mentioned separating the raw milk into different tanks with the, as we know, 1% or 2%. Is it just a matter of adding water to it? I've never quite understood that.
It does taste like water when you drink fat-free milk, but it's not. And again, remembering that milk is 92% water. But no, adding milk water to your milk would be, you'd be shut down for that. You don't ever add water to your milk.
So what you have a process that separates it and breaks it down into lower percentages?
Well, basically what you do is if you take the cream off, then what have you got? That's your butter fat. Your whole milk is the legal definition of whole milk is a minimum of 3.25% fat.
So that's where the twos and the ones.
And they're right. And you know, interestingly, if you just let milk rise, you let the cream rise, you don't homogenize it, you don't make that all mixed together, you will have your cream at the top, and below it will be 2% milk. And that's where 2% originally came from. It's just through the natural process of letting cream rise to the top.
Interesting. I'm giving away my age, but I can remember as a kid. My mom used to, they used to deliver the milk.
Right.
And had a little kind of a cardboard top on it. And the top, as you say, was cream. I don't know what was below, but it tasted
2% milk.
Good.
Yeah.
Amazing. So the 2% was there all along. We just didn't know it.
That's right. We just didn't label it that way.
All the marketers have taken advantage of that and say, hey, we got 2%, 1%.
Right.
And got on to all of this stuff to keep us trim and skin.
Right. We just got to pay more attention to it. Right?
And yet it was there right from the beginning. Interesting.
Yep.
Where was your husband born?
He was born actually here in Florida, but his family relocated from Maine
before he was born. He's
a cracker, is he? He is a cracker. You can call him an original cracker since he was born and raised here. So now this big room you see here is the cooler that we'll house. Now, initially, we'll be putting out pretty low volumes of bottled milk. So we'll take it straight from the bottling room into a refrigerated truck and ship it directly off immediately. But as we grow, then this room right here will be utilized for storing all the bottled milk while the trucks come up to load it up.
How long can you store? When I see these labels, you know, the first thing we do when we go in the store is we look at the bottle and it says, you know, there's a date on it.
That's right.
And it doesn't always seem to make that date for some reason, maybe because we're storing it at a different temperature.
Mm-hmm.
But I just noticed, funny enough, the other day I bought some 2% milk, and it said it was good to the 30th, but yet day before yesterday it was off. So how does one determine what date needs to be on?
That's an excellent question, and you hit it right on the head. It is temperature. The key to longevity in milk is cold, 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 and cold, keeping it cold always.
Right.
So if somebody delivers milk to a store, and let's say they put it out on the dock and don't put it in the refrigerator for even 10 minutes, they've affected the shelf life. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really important to manage how your milk is carried from one place to the next. The way they determine the length of the milk, like for instance right now, it doesn't matter. Our milk could hold for 60 days, let's say, but it doesn't matter. The state of Florida will only allow us to put a 14-day shelf life on it, or it might be a 16-day shelf life on it.
That's the window, 14 days.
Yeah, well, for brand new. Then every 3 months we can apply for an additional 2 days. So it will take years for us to build up to a 28-day longevity on the shelf. Not because it won't hold that long, but because that's the way the state of Florida does it.
And you haven't demonstrated that, in fact, that your milk will hold up for that long.
Well, it doesn't really matter. I probably could demonstrate it right now, but the state of Florida, and that's a big argument we have, because other states will allow you to prove it and say, my milk holds for 30 days, and they say, great, that's the shelf life you can put on it. But the state of Florida will not allow us to do it. They say 14 days, I don't care how long it lasts, and then you earn that by every 3 months or so.
Show us.
They say show us. But you actually have to prove that your milk will hold. So if your milk went bad before that due date on there, it was probably a handling issue because that milk is tested all the time. The inspectors will come and just take it off the shelf out of the grocery store and do an independent test to make sure your milk is holding for the date that you've stamped on it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had an incident like that, then there was probably something in the handling of that milk along the line that caused it to shorten its shelf life.
It's interesting. It said that I sent the 30th, and it went off 2-3 days ago. Because I figured, I'm going away just after that, and I thought, well, you know, this is good. 30th will work.
Right.
But 2-3 days ago, it went off, so I had to go out and buy another, you know,
right,
another container of milk to get me through the rest of the month.
Exactly, and that's one of the things we'll really focus on. I've had a lot of distributors come and want to carry our milk, and one of our first questions is, what is your process for handling our milk? You know, we want a distributor that will take it literally from our refrigerated thing and put it into somebody else's refrigerator. Don't leave it on the dock. Don't leave it for somebody else to handle. I want my milk cold, cold, and then cold. And so that's something we'll manage heavily.
That also brings up another question on who you're selling your milk to, for example.
Right.
I mean, if you sell it to a wholesaler and then they distribute it to whomever, for example, you know, we see different labels on different milk in some
right.
of the smaller stores than we do in the larger supermarkets like Publix or Winn-Dixie or
right.
whatever. So I often think that if milk is delivered to stores as large as Publix, how quickly does it really get to the shelf so
right.
it can get to the consumer versus a smaller store? Which
right.
may move it faster or may handle it faster. I don't know.
Or may actually move it slower because
exactly.
you think about the demand that's at Publix, and Publix actually buys their milk raw and processes it on site and bottles it on site. Now, Sweet Bay and Winn-Dixie and all them, they do not. Other people will bottle it for them and bring it in. So that's a constant management issue to make sure that you've got your supply and demand watched. A smaller store may be better, may not be better. Depends on how
exactly.
fast the milk moves.
And I'm sure at this point you've identified the retailers that you're going to be dealing with.
We're still working on that. We're still working on it. We've had a lot of people approach us.
I would think that milk that is, and I never see it advertised, and I never see it promoted, but I would think locally produced milk would be more in demand than you're going to get from these big commercial
Amen.
Operations.
Yeah.
I never see anybody say, hey, you know, try our milk, or it's just...
Well, therein lies the big reason. There's only 143 dairies in Florida,
right.
and most of them do not... I think there's one other very small bottler, and he's up in North Florida. The rest of them do not bottle their own milk. This is a big venture. This is not something the average... person or farmer would really want to even deal with. It's a huge initial expense, but my husband and I are constantly thinking of ideas. We love the challenge. So for us, it's right up our alley. But it's not a common thing that you'll see in Florida as ice cream, cheese, or milk being made on farm. We're really not a dairy state.
And consequently, the offset to that, or the offshoot to that, will be agritourism, which we'll be talking about when we get down.
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
So, yeah, we are praying that there will be a big demand, and there already has been a huge interest for locally produced milk. They're all excited about that, because it isn't widely available. So we're believing that everything will just come and, you know, line up as we actually start putting it in the bottle. This is something that it's still evolving, but what I'm trying to do here, and I haven't had as much time to get back on this project because I'm so heavily involved in getting this milk in the bottle right now. But I really want to feature Florida. We are a Fresh from Florida member, and so there is so much agriculture, and there are so many local crafters. I've got woodworkers, furniture builders, and I feature some of their furniture in here. I have orchids from Orchid Mania right here in Myakka. I have a honey that's been produced on from local hives, bees that go right onto our local farms to produce this honey, and there's a lot of health benefits from that. I have jams and whatnot that are produced here in Palmetto. I'm just really trying to promote Florida-produced products here. We have ice cream for now that's coming from Working Cow that we just love their ice cream. It's very high in butterfat, which makes it have a very rich flavor to it. And then we have a lot of animal-related type gifts here, too, so that people can take memorabilia from the farm and the baskets and the gift bags and things so people can put together a nice little gift bag. But when we open up the milk plant, then we'll have a whole line of cheeses that we will actually carry, and then as we make our own cheeses, we'll add that to the line.
And I understand you have some special recipe yogurts that are might be coming from south of the border.
That's right. We do. We have a Colombian cheesemaker and yogurt shake maker. And, you know, I went to cheese school, by the way, in Vermont. Artisan Cheese School in Vermont. There's only two in the United States, and Vermont is known for its cheese school. And I learned there, I'll tell you what I learned, that it is truly an art. It is an art. You don't just step into it all of a sudden and become a cheesemaker.
Here you're going to do a special brie, which is one of my favorites.
Ah, that is one of my favorites. And we had the great pleasure of doing some tours in California where there's a group there that does a double and a triple cream brie. But we don't have access to that here widely. You know, there are some specialty stores, of course, you can go into and get those cheeses, but yes, we'd love to do it.
Right. Yeah. But of course, in California, you get a little wine along with it.
We hope to be adding that too, as we're now a member of the Florida Grape Growers Association, and we will be growing some muscadine grapes here next year. And we hope to also be able to feature some of the wines that are made here in Florida. There are 11 wineries in Florida. It is. And I have a winery right around the corner from the farm. So they are excited and anxious for us to grow grapes. They need grapes. They need more grapes. They're limited by their land capacity there. So we hope to get that going next year.
Good. Well, you know, we've had a nice tour. Now I think what we ought to do is sit down and let's talk about agritourism.
Okay.
This is Roy Lowy, and you're listening to Talking Travel on WTMY in Sarasota, broadcasting worldwide on TTRN.com and also on WTMY. Continuing series of Rediscovering America, city by city, covering attractions in our own backyard. Today we're going to chat about agritourism. Agritourism is a style of vacation that normally takes place on a farm, and this may include a chance to help with the farming task. During the visit, agritourism is often practiced in wine-growing regions and in Italy and Spain. In America, agritourism is widespread and includes farms and ranches. So we're at the Dakin Farm, and I'm speaking with Karen Dakin. Karen, thank you for inviting us out here, and we've just done a wonderful tour of this dairy farm, and can you give us a little background on how you got into this? Now, I understand that there are parts of the family that have been in the dairy business for some time or have acquaintances that have been in it. Why don't you just tell us how you made this decision, first of all, to get into the dairy farm, and then we'll get into the agritourism aspect of it.
My husband was born and raised in as a dairy farmer. His father came from Maine 35 years ago and settled in Parrish, Florida. So that's where he was just born and raised in it. And he is truly a cow man. So he's been doing this forever. But he started on his own in his early 20s. So, and he's now a little older than 40. So almost 20 years he's been dairy farming on his own. And he was farming at the family homestead property in Parrish up until, about 8 years ago. We started looking for property of our own. We married 10 years ago, and the family farm is, and this kind of leads into why we're doing what we're doing, because the family farm is in Parrish where there's this beautiful little creek that runs through the property. Well, as time has evolved, we found that creeks on a property where you have a lot of animals is not an environmentally good thing to have there.
Is that right? Why is that?
That's right, because they don't want the manure in the water.
Exactly.
So you really have to be conscientious of that now. You know, and people just really didn't know the effects of that over time way back then. So it was, you know, real cute to have your cows in the water until about 15 years ago.
And getting them out.
Yeah, and getting them out. So about 10 years ago when we got married, we started looking for property where we could, that did not have creeks and that we could start our own farm. So, and as we started doing that, the state of Florida started also instituting permitting for dairy farms over a certain size. And what that did was forced a lot of existing farms to have to retrofit their farms to accommodate balancing nutrients, and that's to keep your all your nutrients balanced. You know, whether you're fertilizing a crop or whether you're dealing with manure issues or feed issues or whatever it may be, they didn't want to see anything reach certain levels. You have to keep things balanced at a certain level. At any rate, when we built this farm 6 years ago, we already were well aware of what these requirements were going to be, and so we were able to design this farm to deal with those issues. And as one thing led to another, and whereas the public may not see it as much as the farmer does, I mean, yes, the people start complaining milk prices have gone up, but the farmer from month to month sees huge fluctuations in milk prices to the farmer. And so we can be up 1 month and severely down another month.
It's just like our gasoline, and so experience the same thing with feed.
Yes.
I should guess for all those same reasons.
Same reasons. All of our costs associated. And then the price we get paid for milk follows the cheese commodity market. It's a very complicated formula that was developed back in the 1920s. And it just still holds the way we price our milk. So we see these changes in milk prices just go up, down, up, down. And when we moved into this new facility 6 years ago, milk prices dropped so substantially that we could have easily lost the farm that very first year. And, you know, the large amounts of money that we can lose in a year can sometimes take 2, 3, 4 years to recuperate. So, you know, we started saying, okay, we're in this. We've already built this facility.
Now you've got the investment.
How can we, yes,
combat how do we supplement it?
These
right.
challenges? You bet. And so one of the obvious things for us to do was to do composting. That was one of our first ideas. And when we designed this facility, we designed it to capture our manure and incorporate it with yard clippings. And it just solves a lot of problems for us. Those yard clippings go around our barns and help to keep the cows dry and keep the ground elevated from the great lengths of amounts of water that we can get in the summertime. And then we will we'll compost. It takes about a year for it to kind of do its breakdown. And then after about a year, we have a product that we harvest. We put it through a big screen and we sell that. So that's one of the first things we did to add value to our farm. So we continued along those lines of educating ourselves on how we can add value to our farm. And the University of Florida and our extension agents and just all kinds of awesome resources that we have around us really just put a lot of ideas in front of us and seminars that we could go to. And so I've been all over the place. My husband and I have traveled all over this country looking at different farms and how they deal with their issues and gone to many, many, many seminars. And so we made this very big, big decision years back that we were going to put a milk plant on the farm. And so, you know, this is an idea that was birthed probably almost 8 years ago.
Now, when you started this project, did you have this agritourism concept in the back of your mind, or did it happen later when you realized that, wait a minute, we're going to have a lot of peaks and valleys here. We're going to need something, if nothing else, as incremental revenue.
Right. Well, we did not have the same ideas we have today. Back then when we first started thinking about the public coming on the property, we always have people coming here with a level of interest to see, you know, wow, I want to see a dairy farm. And so we have people stopping in all the time. We really did not birth this full scope of this idea until we met Scott Cagle in Georgia. And he really kind of helped solidify some of these ideas we had rolling around in our heads and could help us actually put it into action. He does this all over the country. So he has a consulting firm that does agritourism, and he really helped solidify a lot of these ideas we have. So yes, it got a little bigger than we originally intended.
And you mentioned earlier when you started building some of these facilities and that little bridge that goes between this building and where the cows are milked and where you store the milk, you suddenly realize, well, if we put some windows in here, we've got the bridge already. This is a perfect spot for the people to wander through and see how this all comes about. Because I grew up in New York City and never saw a cow. So I got pretty excited when I got to some of these places where I could get out there and back to nature, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the location that we are too.
Exactly.
And it, you know, and yes, and that is really how it got birthed originally, is by this bridge that we needed to pipe our milk over, and just the way we set up the building where we could put these viewing windows in. But we're only 20 minutes east of the interstate, right there on the border of Sarasota and Manatee County. That puts us about 35, 40 minutes from the beaches, and an hour and a half from Disney World. So we're really in a pretty good location for people to make a day trip out.
Well, exactly, and it, you know, to our listeners, I would certainly say that, you know, on a day you just want to get off the beach for a while, it's what did it take us, maybe 30 minutes to drive here. And what I found interesting, actually, that it's actually a Bradenton address. It's still in Manatee County, and one doesn't think of that when you're in the city of Bradenton, that just 20, 30 minutes from there, there's a working dairy farm. And it is. It's here, and it's quite nice. So I think that people that are listening, you certainly want to have a look at this and get on out here. Now, Karen, how would somebody find out where you are, how to reach you? I'm assuming there's a website. Well, I know there's a website, but is there a phone number? What would you suggest?
Yep. The best way to get a full scope of what we have going on here is to absolutely go on our website. So you want to go on www.dakin, which is spelled D-A-K-I-N, dairyfarms.com. You can always call us at 941-322-2802, but you're going to get a really good glimpse of what's going on here at the farm by going on that website. And, you know, just to add something to what you said, we are one of three remaining dairy farms in Manatee County, and the other two dairy farms are my brother-in-law's. So it's my husband's two brothers.
Is that right? Yeah. How far are they from here?
They're 10 minutes from here. Yeah. So, you know, so that there just aren't many dairies for you to go see and have this type of experience.
And there are also other activities around here. There's the Lipizzan horses.
Yes.
And one could really make a day out of this. You could see the dairy farm. Now, are you going to have lunches? Or if somebody comes out, just kind of mentally or verbally walk us through what would happen, what they can do, and what amount of time they would be spending here.
Okay, that's a very good question. Right now we're in what we call our fall season, and we put a 9-acre corn maze in. So along with cow train rides and hay tunnels, an animal barn, pig races, we have karaoke at night. We have campfires where you can roast an all-beef hot dog or some more. So right now we're really promoting this corn maze in the fall season. So we're open to the public on weekends right now.
Right.
Friday from 5 to 10, Saturdays from 10 to 10, and Sundays from 2 to 6. You can also come take a hay ride. We're almost done with our path where we'll be doing actually the dairy tour via a hay ride. But you can come out and do a hayride as well. During the week, we're doing scheduled tours, lots of schools or larger groups of people that want to come out and schedule. But we're fully staffed on the weekend for larger amounts of people to come in.
As we call walk-ins or walk-ups, or, you know, people that just see the sign and stop by and do individual tours.
Right. So you do want to stay in touch with our website, because then after this fall season, we'll change our hours, and we're still kind of vacillating a little bit about how to structure it during the week for the public, because we really would like to accommodate them. They, like I said, they do come up anyhow. They just drive up and want to see the dairy. So I do need to be able to accommodate that. It's just getting in gear for it to be properly staffed to accommodate people just coming up during the week. So,
all right. So now, as we drove in here, when we entered, we came into your shop. You have a small little shop. Would that be the normal way that someone would come in? Or
yep. They'll come in, and there are signs directing them to park at the entrance of our farm market, which is also it's the front part of our milk plant. So they just come into the farm market, and that is open 6 days a week, actually, because we are 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, milking our cows.
Okay, what kind of product do you have in the little shop as we came in?
In the farm market right now, what we have is we have ice cream, and then we have a lot of products that we're featuring from local crafters or different type food products that from Florida, produce type things like honey from local bees and jams and jellies from palmetto made with our own fruits. And here in Florida, we have soaps and salt scrubs that are made in Kissimmee, Florida. I have chutneys that are coming from Pine Island and things like that. So I'm trying to really feature fresh from Florida.
Right. And eventually you'll get into a lot of your own product, and one of which is a favorite of mine, and that is the brie.
Yes.
And I somehow heard that, is it a three-level brie, or?
It's called a triple cream brie.
Triple cream, there we go.
You can have just a normal brie, or you can do a double cream or a triple cream.
Reminds me of flan in the Dominican Republic. Yeah. You get it through. Anyway, so you're going to do this special brie, which will be made here on the property.
Right. That's one of our considerations before I could publicly commit to that cheese. That's where my husband and I are still kind of tossing around, because every cheese, now that cheese only takes 2 weeks to age, but each cheese that takes that needs to age has the requirement of its own aging room, and we do have an aging room, and that is my choice. That's my big vote, and I believe my husband's leaning in that direction as well. But we'll also be doing a fresh cheese curd, and that doesn't require any aging. We've had a lot of requests for that, and it's been our intention to do that all along, so to have a fresh cheese curd and some other fresh cheeses that we can make.
Now, additionally, I understand that you're going to do a special yogurt that maybe comes from a recipe south of the border.
Yes. We're going to be doing a yogurt shake. We have a cheesemaker and yogurt, drinkable yogurt, what would you call them? Maker, I guess, for lack of better words right now, that comes from Colombia with over 25 years of experience. So his recipe is well known within the Latin community. And he just makes an incredible yogurt shake, which is a drinkable yogurt.
Now, is this obviously a flavored different flavors? I'm assuming, is that correct?
Yes, we can offer a wide variety of flavors. Initially, the top selling flavor is strawberry. There is a lot of demand though for a plain, believe it or not, just a plain drinkable yogurt within the Latin community. But some of the other ones would be pineapple, mango, and a strawberry banana, and then possibly a guava and things like that along those lines. But, we can add whatever fruits that we want to.
Now, why a drinkable yogurt versus one that we normally see that comes in a container with fruit on the bottom or as an additional product? Is there...
That's also a good product, and it's always something that can be added on. Every product that you produce requires a special type of packaging and special type of processing, so it's always an additional piece of equipment or two or three pieces of equipment. So we'll already be bottling fluid milk, so it'll be easy for us to add on a drinkable yogurt and bottle that as well. And we'll be introducing probiotics into that drinkable yogurt, which will allow us to make some of those health claims for digestive and immunity enhancing. So we're excited about that.
Now, what about fresh milk? Will people be able to purchase? Well, I guess we better draw a line here. There's a difference between fresh unpasteurized milk, which one can't, I guess, by law sell in Florida. They can in the Carolinas. Versus what you will have processed. Now, they'll be able to buy milk here as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
And what are you going to call it?
Dakin Dairy Farms, of course.
Of course.
It'll have our logo on it. I'm real excited about how our logo looks. It's different.
Right.
We're not doing the standard, and it's I'm really trying to get the point across that it's coming straight from our farm. You know, it's one source. It's not a mix of a whole bunch of milks. It's, you can come see where your milk is actually coming from right on this farm. And we're real excited about that. Yes, you'll see Dakin Dairy Farms milk, and you'll have it in whole milk, 1%, 2%, and low fat.
All right, so now the agritourism person that comes out here, they'll get to go on a tour as we just did and see the cattle or the cows. There's a difference between cows and cattle. Cattle is meat, and cows are for milk, basically.
Typically, they're all cattle, but
they don't have horns,
yeah,
maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Well. If they all have horns, we remove the horns.
Oh,
otherwise,
is that right?
They hurt each other. They'll poke each other with them.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Even Derry?
Oh, yeah. They got horns, all right.
Well, that's kind of interesting. In any event, but they're ladies, and so they're
always much more
gentle than, of course, those guys with the big old horns out there you see on ranches. So they'll get a tour of the milk process. There's also a feeding area.
Correct.
Right. That's a separate, really a separate barn, wasn't it?
Yes. Where they sleep and eat is, we have five of those type barns that we call freestall barns. So you'll get to see that and see all the different ingredients that our cows eat.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the corn maize during the fall season.
Right.
Now that has to be a project in itself.
Oh, that was really a project, and it's awesome. That we had several sponsors, so we have logos cut into that from an aerial point of view. I got to show you that picture. You'll see our logo cut into it. You'll see Farm Credit's logo cut into it, Farm Bureau's logo cut into it, the Joy FM, and the Bradenton Herald. And you can clearly see it from above because it's 9 acres. But that was quite an event to have that.
Maybe you ought to have a video cam on a tall pole that could look down onto the maze, especially if you're missing a few people at the end of the day, you might be able to find them. And you can stream it live on your website.
Good. You can always add these things on, right? Maybe next year with the video camera.
Yeah, there you go. So what else is in store for them? And I just want to get back that if I want to spend the best part of a day, I'd leave the house. I don't really need to bring a lunch because I can probably get something to eat. You'll have box lunches or something.
No, on the weekends we have a concession stand where we have homemade pulled pork barbecue sandwiches.
Yeah.
We have hamburgers, all beef hot dogs and chips and baked beans.
And maybe
beans
even if there were big groups, you could have a regular cookout barbecue.
Oh, absolutely. During the week, you can either bring your own lunch if you came as a group, or we will have lunch brought in from one of our local cafe, which has excellent food. So, yes, there's always food available here, whether you come during the week or on the weekend. And then, yes, you make a day out of it by coming, and you can either tour the dairy, you can do the hay ride, you can do the corn maze. You can just relax out under the oak. We have a beautiful oak hammock, and that was another thing that spurred all this. We have a gorgeous oak hammock. And then the campfires, we actually start during the day because the families are really enjoying this. They come and they buy their all-beef hot dog, and we sell it with a skewer and whatnot. And they go out and they cook this hot dog, and then they can come back and get some marshmallows, and we sell little s'more packages, and they can make s'mores. And we have our own little on-site radio station, so we have music that we pipe through with announcements and things like that, so there's some nice background music. We just added karaoke in the evenings after 6. So
now, where would you do that?
Under the tent. We have a tent out there.
Okay.
And we have it set up, so we bring out the karaoke equipment, and we put that up after 6 o'clock on Fridays and Saturdays. So you can come do that and do the campfires and the corn maze with the flashlights. There's clues set up in the corn maze. And then we've added like a scavenger hunt here too on the farm.
Right.
So when you come, we give you your first clue and it sends you to a particular area, and then the clues will send you from here, there, and everywhere. Now, Halloween on October 31st, we're opening up the farm for a non-scary event at the farm where you can come trick-or-treat at the farm. You can do the scavenger hunt, which will add some more things to the scavenger hunt. Do the corn maze. We'll have a costume contest at 6:30. And then, of course, karaoke will be open in the campfires and things like that. So this would be a real different experience to come on out.
But if you're walking through the corn maze, somebody's not the cowman, or somebody isn't going to jump out of the corn and scare the life out of you.
Yeah, no, we're not making it scary, but we're making it fun and interactive.
Right.
So it'll be fun and whatnot.
Right.
To
now, I noticed that as we drove in here, there were some smaller animals, cows or calves, or is there a petting part there as well?
We have an animal barn where we have some bunnies, and we have sheep, and we have chickens and turkeys and ducks, and then we have pigs where we do our pig races. I forgot to tell you about that. So we have pigs that race, yes. And on the weekends,
you don't ride them. I mean, they race on their own.
They race on their own. Yeah. Yes.
You know, otherwise, you'd have to be a small little piglet to get on there, I guess. Yeah.
About every hour on the weekend, we'll get the pig races going.
You sure don't get lonely around here, do you?
No. Oh, my gosh. I just love it here. If I could just stay here all the time, I'd be happy.
Yeah, it's really quite beautiful. Now, as you get into the agritourism, and I would guess at one point, when Scott and people like that are working with the CVBs and other areas for incoming tourists, and maybe even having these things pre-sold in mm-hmm. Europe, whereby they'll be coming in larger buses.
Right.
Do you have some other long-range things that you think you might add when there's, you know, when it's not just a scathering of people as you're starting up?
I have all kinds of ideas that we want to add on to as it evolves. You know, we're still just trying to get a lot of our T's and crossed and I's dotted for what we've got here. But long term, I can see steak dinners and I can see shish kebabs over the fire. I can see, you know, there's a lot of things I can
maybe
see.
Maybe even a little rodeo or...
Well, when the corn maze dies, that area, that's actually what we call the event area.
Right.
So, yes, actually when that dies, sometime in January or February, we will do a huge event for the opening of our plant here, for the milk plant. And we'll have a wine and cheese fest of some sort, and we'll have a rodeo and whatnot. So, yes, we are already starting to plan some special events that we'll have here on the farm. Right now, people can schedule birthday parties here, corporate events, and whatnot. So it really is a nice setting for private parties.
Now, as one arrives here, are there guides on the weekends that can take them through it, or is it strictly a do-it-yourself?
No, it's a guided tour.
It's a guided tour.
And it's,
otherwise,
it's very
it
well
could
done.
Be kind of confusing people going in different directions.
Right.
Get a little group together, and when they get enough, then they'll go off and...
Yeah, we actually will run them about every 20 minutes, regardless of the size. We have awesome tour guides, and they'll just accumulate whoever's here take them around.
I saw an ad on your website. You were looking for tour guides. So if there are some people out there that would like to spend a little time guiding people around the farm, I would imagine they could give you a call.
They could. I've got a nice group of them, but we're always, you know, what's nice about the tour guides is most of them are retired, and they just they like to come in and just have a little taste of the farm, so they'll come in as we have them scheduled. Yeah,
that's great. Now, as I mentioned, the Lipizzan's horses are quite close by. Is there a possibility at some point that you'll be working with some of these other ranchers and dairy farmers and the Lipizzan to make it where people could actually come out and stay somewhere locally overnight and then tour these, or with it would be a combination? They could do this, the Lipizzan and the other, but it would be all organized under one umbrella, so they'd...
And, yeah, we've already been talking, and Gabby Herman is a good friend of the Dakin families. She grew up with some of my sister-in-laws and whatnot. So, and I've spent some time with her, just an awesome, awesome family. And we really do lend ourselves to each other. There's also the Fiorelli Winery that's right around the corner. So really you could make a nice little day of it. And her times that she's open, and I'm trying to remember now, but they really blend with our time. So it'd be very easy for them to go from her facility over to ours. And we're right around the corner. We're not even 5 minutes from each other.
In fact, you could probably transport them in a hay wagon or something.
Almost. Probably not quite. But it'd be real easy for the bus to take them from the Lipizzan's
to us,
and then even to the winery. So that is something that, yes,
that would be really interesting. I mean, that would be the thing I think I would certainly,
absolutely,
as an adult, would enjoy. First of all, I'd like to see the horses. I haven't done so.
Right.
This was a very interesting tour, to say the least. And, of course, your company was marvelous.
Right.
And
thank you.
The fact that one could also go to the winery at some point would be great.
Yes.
Karen, I want to thank you. Once again, give us your website.
Our website's www.dakin, which is DAKIN, dairyfarms.com.
And the phone number?
It's 941-322-2802.
Is there anything else you'd like to add we might have missed?
No, I just want to encourage people to come out while we've got these hours going on the weekend, because this is strictly for the fall season where we're going to be open till 10 in the evening to the public. After that, it would be private parties and scheduled parties, and we'll, our hours will change to Saturdays 10 to 6, and then during the week we're trying to figure out exactly how we'll structure those public tours. But so I do encourage people to come on out while the corn maze is still alive. Whenever it dies is when the fall season ends, which will be sometime at the beginning of December. So come on out.
Good, and I second that because we've just had a lovely tour. Come on down, y'all. And this is Roy Lowy. You're listening to Talking Travel on Sunday Travel Radio.